Well, unless you're going to sit at your computer and your communism is only about interpreting past events and the actions of other people, at a certain point, you just have to put down the idealized understanding of things, even though it's an ideal, right, to aspire to.
They're useful as idealists, like at a certain level.
Right.
And like, I don't know, I'm somebody who takes idealism seriously, but like there's a reason that Marxism is not idealism.
Yeah.
Even if it takes like idealist philosophy very seriously, and why it's like, even though like I totally argue for holding on to, like, you know, and Traversa does here, like holding on to utopian aspirations, I think, you know, like that it's important to have those ideals and those things that you really want to strive for, but like that has to come into like political actuality. Like it has to be willing to get his hands dirty.
That's why, right. I like what he says here when he says that it's a further down the page, even further or whatever. It says that far from being linear, its trajectory was fractured, marked by breaks and bifurcations. It includes insurgencies from below and radical changes from above, leaps and thermidorian regressions that only a retrospective worldview could inscribe into a single historical sequence. And he further says, though Lenin and Stalin were not alike, they belong to the same process. Napoleon's mm-hmm. revolutionary wars can be included in our general conception of the French Revolution, even if we do not regard them as an embodiment of the same spirit of 1789, and so on.
Mm-hmm. And he's quoting Sheila Fitzpatrick on that line.
Yeah, right.
Which is super great. We were talking about Trent was foreshadowing that earlier. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate it. He says in her book, the revolution runs from February 1917 until the Great Purges of 1936 and 38. And so there is a really lucid analogy with Napoleon there.
Yeah, and I would say it begins in February in 1917, and it ends in 1991.
I think I agree with that. Like Isaac Deutscher extends the process through 1956.
But then her book would be like one of
those. I'm a baby. Yeah, I feel like I would go all the way to the end of it. Like
her book would be
maybe the 80s is maybe where, I don't know.
But then Fitzpatrick's book would be one of those fantasy novels that's like way too wide for one binding. You know,
those are my favorite kind.
You can't read it on the bus.
The thing about this is that like Perestroika and Glasnost would not have meant anything to anybody in the Soviet Union. Unless
that's true.
Unless the prospect of regenerating the revolution was being waited for and desired already, which mm-hmm. that means that like, or the same thing could be said about the Khrushchev thaw. And so even just with it,
well, that's why I would definitely extend it beyond the 36.
Yeah. And otherwise the only thing left to do is just look at, pick a cutoff year and say everything after that was bad. And then in that case,
yeah.
When is the cutoff year? Shouldn't the cutoff year be 1918, whenever things started to look a little bit confusing and the Bolsheviks started making decisions that we personally don't love to think about? It's just no good. It's just dumb is what that is. I also think that you can think this without glorifying anything else that happened. Like you can think you can think Perestroika was good and also think that Gorbachev was
incompetent.
Yeah. Because that's yeah. reality.
Yeah. And that's why when you're dealing with the RPG version of politics, you don't need, like, if you have a program that is only sort, the incentives have no grounding in real politic, or even if it's a moral program, if it can't interact with reality without compromising itself, which is what has to happen whenever anything interacts with reality, then it is purely moral. And in that case, you should just, I don't know, maybe discover religion, because you're in that realm now.
You know? But also, like, what's a religion of any kind in which the same thing does not happen?
No, you're right. It's not a good metaphor. But what I'm trying to say is, you know what I'm trying to say.
Well, yeah.
Well, amusingly, like the religions, in order to become like as powerful as they did, had to get their hands dirty and had to like compromise a little bit on things. Like,
Yeah.
There's a great passage at the bottom of the page. The binary vision of a revolutionary Bolshevism opposed to a Stalinist counter-revolution allows one to distinguish between emancipatory violence and totalitarian repression, which is crucial, but also hides the connections that unite them and avoids any interrogation about their genetic link. This is central to what we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest is equally sterile. The conservative interpretation of a substantial continuity from Lenin to Gorbachev, grounded in the ideological bases of the USSR, simply carries on the apologetic and immunizing purpose of Cold War liberalism.
Right.
Market society and liberal democracy are the features of a natural order, and criticizing capitalism inevitably leads to totalitarianism. But I think the first half of it is crucial to what we're talking about. Like, we have to soberly evaluate the relationship, the germinal relationship between all the good and all the bad. And we can't just put on the costumes that we like the best, you know?